Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Pride members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Barstool Sports and Foreplay have partnered up with Skillz, the leading sports skill training brand, to develop co-branded golf training aids that will help you improve your game. The Skillz Barstool Golf line was designed to help sharpen every aspect of your game from tee to green. The products help you develop your swing, whether it's gaining distance, improving accuracy, chipping around the greens, or dialing in your putting. All products are made by golfers for golfers. They were developed by industry experts who understand the game. Skillz Barstool Golf products are now available at golfgalaxy.com/barstool or in store at Golf Galaxy and select Dick's Sporting Goods House of Sport locations.
Reveille, reveille, reveille! It's a Friday edition here on Zero Block 30, and today we have five rounds of the magazine. Round number one, honey, North Korea, they're having a week. They got viral videos, a human in a human cannonball suit, and they've been chirping at the USA that they're going to have things like a, quote, invincible military. Sure you are, North Korea.
Sure, Dan.
Sure you are. Maybe focus on not being fat as shit, Ken Jung. How about that?
Okay.
We're gonna fat shame.
We're always gonna fat shame.
It's fat. You can fat shame dictators. It's just how that's just the way the cookie crumbles.
Them's
if you're bricks. If you're fat and not a dictator, we're not shaming you. If you happen to be a dictator who's listening and you are fat, we're shame coming at you. President Xi, you're on deck because you look like Winnie the Pooh.
Can I share something really quickly for Kate? Because I think she would maybe be aghast at this, but Kate, I'm going to give you a quote from a very prominent figure in U.S. history. You tell me who it is. The quote is, "There is nothing I think more unfortunate than to have soft, chubby, fat-looking children who go to watch their school play basketball every Saturday and regard that as their week's exercise." Who said that?
What?
Go watch. Martha Stewart.
No. Good guess, though.
Martha Washington.
Nope. JFK.
Oh.
JFK was a fat shamer.
Yeah. Well, it's not exactly the most moral character of all time either.
No.
Fucking that's why
taking lines of coke off of Marilyn Monroe's butthole in the Lincoln bedroom.
Yeah.
Just thought you
not that we're that shaming that either. We don't.
No, but when Jackie O is in the other room, there's no reason to give Marilyn Monroe a little stroke of the pink canoe. Round number two, a lesson in how not to take accountability comes to us from the governor of Missouri. And round number three, unacceptable. An errant U.S. drone strike killed 10 members of the family. They're still waiting compensation. We're going to try to get to the bottom of that and see what the Biden administration is doing that. Spoiler alert, I bet it's nothing. Round number four, Kate went out on Twitter and talked to people about their worst MP reactions. So we're going to breed some MP hate. Like, we're not going to do fat shaming in round four, but we are going to make people hate MPs a little bit.
Yeah, the worst interactions. People share all the times they've been pulled over, what they were, the worst MP interactions that people have ever had.
Actually, I went through because my wife had her appendix taken out this week. And I had to go to BAMC, which is Brooke Army Medical Center here in San Antonio, one of the finest hospitals in the world, not even having to have a military as a modifier. It is one of the best hospitals in the world. And we are going through and they have like this 8-lane gate that if they had that much traffic, why in the fuck you'd ever have 8 lanes going to a hospital? I don't know, but they have 8 lanes available with serpentines and all that stuff. And my wife was like, that seems like it'd be a fun job, like out there and just seeing everybody saying hello. It's like, dude, I've done that. That job fucking sucks. That's like, bro, it's awful.
It's that is the one way in the military. I think there are very few ways to make time move slow. I think that's at the top of the list.
Oh, it definitely is. And me, I don't know if Kate, you ever stood a gate. I only did it with a dog. And so we would only have to do it like 2 hours a time. Then I could get in my truck and our van, whatever I was carrying the dog around in that day, and go to a different gate and hang out there and talk to different Marines. If you're there, like the Marine schedule, for instance, it's two on, two off every other Sunday. So you work 12 hours one day, 12 hours the next day, then you're off three, and then you work two more days in a row. But those 12-hour days, especially when you're on the 3-day side of it, where you work 2 days off, and then you have 3 days that you have to work, that second day and get knowing that you're going to go home and have to come back in for another, what is essentially a 15-hour shift, because you have to PT before or after your shift. You have to do guard mount. You have to have briefing. You have to do all your paperwork and shit. Those days are awful. Awful. And they always start at 4:30 in the morning. So you have 4:30 in the morning that you get there. And then you don't usually get home, like if you're working that shift, until 6 at night. Outrageous, man. No way. So we're going to, even though those folks are out there doing some shitty jobs, we're going to take a shit down the neck because they deserve it.
Right.
Finally, round number
five. Take them while they're down.
Round number five. I'm not ashamed to say it. I have the smallest cack.
I heard it's very thin.
Yeah, it's a thin cack. A lot of us did. But now the military is trying to beat the cack. They're trying to get a new cack in. So if you can beat the cack, they should have a, they should have a competition that's called Beat Our CAC.
I could.
Yeah, that'll go over very well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So then you can come up with a new design. I, honestly, they should just use the vaccine. Since you have to get the vaccine, just have that little chip that they put in your arm whenever you got the vaccine. Just scan that and that's your ID. How about that?
I think we should have a VAG instead of a visual access grid.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, I have a joke for you guys.
Oh, okay. Man.
Are you guys familiar with the term, what is it called when you get a pussy lift? What is that called?
Oh, I
you get a pussy lift? Like somebody reaches down and lifts you up.
No, like plastic surgery.
Vaginal reconstruction?
No, it's there's a term for it. What is it called, Kate? Do you know?
I need one. I don't know. What is it called?
Let me look it up. Vagina lift surgery. It has a very specific name. Vagina lift
rejuvenation?
No, it's not that.
Rejuvagination?
Vaginoplasty. Vaginoplasty. Wow. Have you heard that term?
No, I've heard of people getting their flaps a little tightened up.
Well, one woman went to go in to get a vaginoplasty, and three people said thank you whenever she was leaving the hospital. Do you know who those three were?
No.
No, I don't have a guess, but
the first one was the surgeon.
I hate this joke already.
The surgeon who let this woman, that was allowed to do the surgery. It was his first time doing the surgery. It was very risky surgery because of the length that it needed. The vaginoplasty was pretty extreme in this case. So it was, the doctor was very thankful that she gave him the opportunity. Two was her husband was very thankful for the opportunity. And three, the person that was in the burn unit that needed new ears. Get it?
Okay.
No.
So, no, I get it. You know what that made me think
that's
of, though?
Good, actually, right? That's good. That's good. That's clever. Yeah, pussy ears. Come on. What are we doing here? We're not doing a little pussy goofing or first thing in the show? What was it?
It is Friday, after all.
Well, it's first 5 minutes. People that are just stumbling upon the show are going to hear a little vaginoplasty joke. Yeah. What's wrong with that?
Yeah.
I don't know. I hate you guys.
Speaking of burn units, I was going to say, but so Brooke Army Medical, quick story. My uncle, when my dad and my uncle, they were like 5 and 3 years old. My grandfather was stationed in Arizona and he had a big barbecue for all his pilot buddies. And they're over there. And my dad drank my uncle's milk. So my uncle went over to like a tiki torch and like shook it because he was angry. Tiki torch fell on top of him, completely burned him. They had to airlift him to Brooke Army Medical. He almost died, but thankfully the people at Brooke Army Medical kept him alive. So,
holy shit.
Yeah.
No, I thought that was going to turn into a joke.
No joke there.
Well, he's got a pussy on his back.
Next thing you know, he's got dick neck. And it's just like, Adam's apple, it's just a big old Prince Albert head.
Two testicles just hanging right underneath. But glad your uncle's okay, though.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, he survived.
If you want to burn something, it's not going to be your coffee, because you're going to get that good coffee from Black Rifle Coffee, who's our presenting sponsor today. Make sure you go pick up a bag or two from blackriflecoffee.com/zero. You can use the code zero to get the freshest coffee that you can possibly imagine. It's a coffee company that is veteran owned and veteran operated, including their co-founder, who actually started making coffee in the back of his gun truck in Iraq. They've donated 6 million cups of coffee to those that are deployed, to law enforcement, medical workers. And they've opened up some brick and mortar shops. I just heard that there was going to be one in Niceville. Quick question. Who knows where Niceville is?
Georgia.
Right next to Pleasantville?
No, Niceville is actually by Panama City.
So
I played sports there. My high school, Tate High School, would go to nice
Spring Breakers. Yeah. Need a pick me up. They can go there.
They had a really good tennis player one time, and he kicked my ass. He won like 6-3, 6-3, I think, straight sets, and then he went on to win state. Unbelievable. But not
wait,
as good wait, as
wait, 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 wait. You played tennis?
Played tennis?
Yeah. I was the number ankles? One seed in my high school. Yeah. I won discus. What? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Those little ankles pivoted.
Mm-hmm.
How wow. is it that, you know, we're 5 years into this thing and I didn't know you played tennis?
Yeah, I love tennis. I played my sophomore, junior, and senior year of high school. Oh, and I was a number one seed and the number two player in the districts.
Whoa.
And I won districts playing singles.
That's the classiest. Not that I don't think you're classy, but that is the classiest.
I mean, coming
thing
from
I've
my background, it is surprising.
It is. It's shocking.
So, how I started to play. Do you want to know how I started to play tennis?
Yes.
There
absolutely.
Was this. Do you know who Ronnie Van Zant is?
That name sounds familiar, but remind me.
They're in Leonard Skinner. Like that's their the family
yeah.
name.
Okay, yeah.
Well, Ronnie Van Zant is from the area where I went to middle school, and it's in Green Cove Springs, Florida. And right across from our neighborhood was Ronnie Van Zant Park. And they had it was like a really country suburbs type of area. But then right in the heart of it, it was an amazing park. Like you would think it's the quality of park that would be in like New York City because they value that type of thing. Mm-hmm. Nice basketball courts with varying heights of the hoops for different ages, kids, several different tennis courts, swing sets, all this stuff. And I used to go up there and I would just play by myself. People would leave balls and I would grab them and put them in my backpack. And then I would just have a bunch and I just practiced serving over and over and over again and got pretty good at it. And I would go, then they had a big cement ball, a wall, and I would just go slam it off the wall over and over again and see how many times I could make it. And I eventually fell in love with it, watched it all the time, played it all the time. And then I thought, maybe I'll play this in college. Like I'm getting pretty good. And I was getting good. Like I was beating a lot of the different teams around. And then I played somebody in the private school like sector. Like people that were getting lessons, going to like clubs and shit. This kid that I played, he was the number, I think he was like number 3 or 4 in the entire state of Florida for everybody under 18, which that's pretty significant considering the tennis schools that are in like Miami.
Right.
This guy, we played, it was like a citywide tournament and private school and public school kids could all play in it. There was no entry fee or anything like that. This dude beat me with a wooden racket. Like he was so good that, and there was times where I couldn't even touch the ball, and not like because he was hitting it 120 miles an hour. It was because the spin that he was at, I didn't have a chance like that to even touch the ball. And I was like, oh, well, I'm done with this. I'm just going to go to Christian college. I don't think
I'm going to be a pastor instead.
Paps, have you watched that Netflix documentary about Marty Fish yet?
No.
That's a very good one. I recommend it. It's part of that Untold series, but about Marty Fish. For those who don't know, Marty Fish was an up-and-comer in the tennis world and really just had a whole big breakdown. And he goes really deep into his mental health and the challenges he faced as a tennis player in the United States and the burden that that became. It's really, really interesting. I would recommend it to anybody.
Well, speaking of fish, you want to reel in a nice toasty cup of that Black Rifle coffee.
That's exactly right. So if you want to go to blackriflecoffee.com/0, you're going to be able to get to the coffee there. It is wonderful. Let's get started with some actual, before we move on, that tidbit about the mental health thing reminded me. There's so many sports where it would make sense if you had like a sort of a mental breakdown if you're doing it. And I was listening to ESPN this morning, the local show here, where they talk just basically about the Cowboys and the Spurs. It's fucking awful. Like the program is just terrible. But I was listening to them talk about, it was actually a Jacksonville show that I was listening to. Sorry. They were talking about Josh Lambeau, who's the kicker for the Jags. And he went last year, the previous two years, he went, didn't miss a kick at home and only missed 2 kicks overall, which is pretty great for an NFL kicker in today's day and age with how far they're asking him to kick, the environments that you're kicking in and things like that. Well, he's fallen off the deep end, like can't hit extra points, where he's had 2 Sundays in a row where they're giving him off for mental health day. How difficult would that be, where if you are having like a mental crisis going on in your head where you can't get out of your head? I had that blogging, like where I'm in a rut where I feel like I can't blog, or if I feel like I'm not being funny, And people aren't watching me in the moment, like trying to watch and like go backspace and shift down and enter and find a new subject to talk about. Nobody's watching me do that. That's all me. If you're a kicker, or if you play tennis or you play golf, like Jordan Spieth went through it as well. and you're having these moments and you break down, and then you have hundreds of thousands of people watching you and yourself. I don't know how you could get out of that funk. It would be so difficult.
No. And I mean, that's one of the parts Marty Fish talked about going to play in the US Open, and he physically felt like he couldn't do it. So it's the same thing you're talking about. Just overly difficult.
That number one overall pick from the 76ers. They couldn't even shoot. He was the number one overall pick and couldn't even shoot free throws.
Ben Simmons, was it?
No, it's Markel Fultz.
It's crazy. The brain is a pretty powerful thing.
Obviously. Yeah. And as we've seen, as we've seen this season on Ted Lasso, Chaps, I believe you're caught up on Ted Lasso.
That's kind of a good transition into round number one, because there is a viral video from North Korea. And I was thinking, if one of these gentlemen had messed up or had some sort of block where they were like, I can't do it, I'm too nervous, like, that's probably it for you in North Korea.
On a global stage where that's getting broadcast all over the place. Yeah. Oh, you're getting tied to a pole and having artillery come after you. No doubt about it.
So North Korean TV 2 days ago now, well, as this comes out, this will be 3 days ago now, released this video of, and it sounds like golf clapping in the background and fake cheering. They have a soundtrack over it, almost like.
And if you're picturing it, picture the state. You've all seen the stadium that they do it in front of, where they're doing their pass and review, and all of them are sitting there. Everybody's in like their North Korean dress uniform, and Kim Jong Il or Un is sitting there in a suit. Like, and they do the same thing every year.
Yeah, and so they're watching this. I guess I would call it like a karate exposition by some of their top military guys. Here's a breakdown of that video. A bunch of guys running through bricks with their heads and then both of their feet. Somebody photoshopped in the sound of when they jump into the air and both feet hit the bricks and then their bodies like disappear. Somebody put in wood chipper sound. So it's like, it looks like they just disappeared into a wood chipper.
My favorite thing about these is every single thing that they show in these videos, this is what you see soldiers and Marines doing in their off time. Not for like a pass and review. Like, we all make fun of it, but we've done this.
McNatt pit.
Instead of kicking bricks, you're running at your buddy and kicking him or her whenever she's wearing flak jacket in the barracks, that you're going to do a double donkey kick to him.
Yeah, this is kind of just kick. Like a more formal Bills Mafia tailgate in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Then it moved on to highly choreographed karate fight with one guy surrounded by like eight dudes, and they'll have really long wooden sticks. And it looked like, I would not be surprised if somebody was like, oh, that exact scene is from this movie. It looked,
you know,
like
what it is. You know, it comes from Steven Seagal. He's the one that made that stuff famous. He does it in Russia all the time still.
Yeah.
Probably. And the North Koreans have like a love relationship with Russia. So there's no doubt that this is like, they are alluding to that.
This has Steven Seagal written all over it. God damn it. Three, punching, kicking, elbowing, more bricks. I mean, there was so many bricks, brick by brick by brick by brick by brick. He might be a stoolie, I don't know. then they're not just doing it with their hands and elbows and whatever. Now the soldiers put their arms onto the bricks, and a sledgehammer hits their arms, which hits the bricks, which breaks the bricks. Then we got guys laying on nails using their abs to break bricks with the sledgehammer. Then this is my favorite part. Out of nowhere, there's just a man on a chain link leash. With no context. He's just a man on a leash. Anyway, then there's a guy breaking chains wrapped around him. And finally, this guy.
That was pretty impressive. That one where he gets wrapped up in chains like it's a boa constrictor going around his waist, and he just kind of exhales and he breaks it. It was awesome. That guy should play Samson in the North Korea movie Samson and Delilah.
I think Steven Seagal sent him Hollywood breaker chains. I think it props. And then finally, he breaks two beer bottles. I was like, that's me at the rugby house back in the day. He breaks two glass beer bottles, puts them on the ground, and then lays down on it. I was waiting for the Indiana University police to show up and arrest him. That's happened to me. But he lays on the broken glass, and a sledgehammer breaks on another brick on his abs. There's just bricks everywhere. I just love, like, and it was flawless, but I'm guessing they had to practice this every day and night for like 2 years. Like, there's no way. But imagine being like, okay, guys,
the pressure the pressure volunteers. Would be unbelievable. And even some points whenever they're doing this, like when they did the part where the guy smashes the two glasses and then he lays down on it, even they flashed a Kim Jong-un up in the audience, and even he had like this little smirk, like, this is fucking absurd. Like, they were doing this because they opted for this type instead of the normal ones where they bring out their two semi-truck size fucking rocket that they have on the back of a fire truck. did that. They opted for this one probably because they got roasted so often. They're like, well, we'll show you. We're actually tough guys over here. We're tough guys. I bet those dudes are tough. I'm not.
You have to be.
They look stupid. I bet
most of those guys one on one would whip my ass. Like, no, because this is all they do. Like, this is all they do is train. Like, the guys in the military there, I think they could probably fuck us up hand to hand because that's all they do. We don't do that shit. We don't do, like, we know that we could kill you from a drone. Like, we don't need to do that.
Yeah. But I do really think there is just a level of stupidity where you're just, you're tough, but then you go beyond just being tough and you're just stupid. So yeah, you don't want to get in a fight with somebody who's just that level.
Or they're going to put your family in a prison camp if you don't do it.
Yeah, that's also probably what's happening. But
got a lot of stressors there in North Korea.
Also, I don't want to sexualize or say the wrong thing or be anti-American.
Cocks, right?
If they were to come out with a calendar of the 12 months of those fellas, I might purchase it.
But Chaps, it occurs to me when you're talking about practice for this sort of thing, obviously you're getting CTE, but it always reminds me when I watch like the X Games and those people in the snowmobiles or the bikes and they're doing the backflips. And I know that they have like the foam pits that they practice in, but when you do it for the first time on the ground, there's no in between. You either land the jump or you don't, you just die. You like crumple your head. So the same thing here with these guys practicing how to break bricks. There's no real practice. You either can break the brick running full speed with your forehead or you can't. Right?
I think these are movie bricks anyways. I think
these are pretty definitely and yeah, I think that's true. Sure.
I mean, thought about that.
You bring those North Korean fellows over here to San Antonio where we got Texas limestone. They ain't breaking these bricks with their bricks. Just absolutely no shot that they're doing that. Yeah. But I do feel bad that they would have to do this type of thing. But if I was going to do any job in North Korea, I volunteer to be the glass guy. Like, because if you're going to do this type of thing, you want to be the end. You don't want to be, you want to be the human cannonball. Like the clowns are a big part of the circus, but I want to be the big show at the end. I want to be the guy that's riding the motorcycle in the steel cage ball, like just going around. I want the most dangerous thing I could do.
Because there is no, like, you can walk across hot cold and there's a science behind how that doesn't really hurt your feet, but laying on glass, glass will fuck you up, man. That's pretty impressive.
It was sugar glass though. That was moving glass again.
Oh yeah, true. Okay. Mm-hmm. But they really are having quite the week. The other thing, and that video has like millions of views now. Millions.
Feel bad for the original guy who posted it because he's like an actual North Korean journalist, like a Englishman who goes over there and does all kinds of journalism stuff. One of the accounts that ripped it like now or something like that, they had like millions and millions of view. The guy who originally posted it, it was like North Korean text. It only had like 100,000 or something. And he must be like, views. Damn. Yeah.
And also to be a journalist who's like, you know, covering this horrible regime. And then all of a sudden, all of us are like, holy shit, look at it.
Whoa, this is hilarious.
This is fucking cool. Speaking of, they're doing a lot. They're in the news a lot this week. There's also a photo going viral of it's a bunch of North Korean soldiers, again, in that slightly browner olive drab and they're all their uniform. And then there's one guy who stands out who social media is calling a rocket man. He was among nearly 30 soldiers posing with Kim Jong-un during an exhibition on Monday. And everyone's in this olive drab, whatever. He is in this. It looks like what a clown would wear when you get shot out of a cannon.
It's a darker blue version of Mr. Freeze's outfit.
Yeah.
From The Incredibles.
Yeah. So people are calling him a human cannonball. The North Korean equivalent of Captain America. People are just roasting this fucking guy. And Chaps, you had the perfect caption for it on ZBT when the whole squad, and it happens to everybody, but when you miss word that we're all supposed to wear our whatever, and you show up in PT uniform when everyone else is in their Charlies or something.
Showing up in the wrong uniform is just the worst feeling. Yeah. The first time that we did that, because you remember, Kate, there was a time in the Marine Corps where you never wore deserts unless you were deployed. Deserts you could wear only on deployment to Iraq or Afghanistan. That's it. Nowhere else could you wear it. It was to signify that you were deployed. Well, eventually the commandant changed it and we're going to do this in the summertime. We're going to wear deserts. The first day that we were supposed to wear deserts, I was wearing woodlands and I had to drive in from a different base to go. And I get to the gate and I see the Marines are wearing deserts. And I was like, fuck. And it was like 4 o'clock in the morning. I had PT at 4:30 and I was just like, oh my God, dude, I'm fucked. Cause we were supposed to run in boots and utes. And I was a brand new Lance Corporal. Just got to Japan. I got fucking wrecked for it.
Yeah. Chaps. And I mean, from everything I can tell, obviously I didn't serve next to you, but from everything I can tell, you were a pretty squared away Marine. So that probably just ate at you to no end.
Well, I was a very good NCO and staff NCO. I was a shitty junior Marine because I felt like a lot of it was beneath me, like where I just didn't want to do a lot of this stuff. And so once I got promoted to be in a leadership position, I was a lot better because I mean, honestly, like you have at that point, I was 23, almost 24 years old. And I had corporals who were 21, 20 years old that were fucking idiots and like telling me what to do. They might have been more technically proficient at their job, but they certainly weren't like smarter than me or had all these different qualities that I respected as a 20-year-old. But then I got my shit together after I found out, like, we don't give a fuck how you think about yourself. You're going to do what you're told. And I was like,
yeah.
Do you think there was one incident that caused that, or was that just something gradual that happened over time?
I don't know. I mean, I think it was just because I wanted to be better. Like, and I knew that I was going to deploy. And really, honestly, I think that real change happened whenever I found out that Sergeant Adam Cann died, and he was a dog handler. And then up until that point, even though I had been in for almost a year and a half, it wasn't real to me because I lived in Okinawa. Okinawa wasn't really participating in deployments at that point. And so I didn't know anyone that was going to actual conflict. And then whenever that happened and it was somebody that we knew in our field and that we respected, it was a wake up call. Like, oh shit, I better
like
pay
all
attention.
This matters
like,
a lot,
to what I'm actually
right.
doing. Like people could die.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That makes sense. So
that was probably that point. Yep. But then I'm sure that they're having that because the North Koreans are saying that they're going to build an invincible, undefeatable military, which will be, honestly, the first time in human history, which is fantastic. Good on them. Congratulations.
Yeah, an invincible military capability that no one can dare challenge. And he also said, our beef's not with South Korea. We're doing fine. It's the U.S. who's meddling with us. So he tried to kind of project on us, too. So North Korea popping off, going viral.
This is like in the NFL when the one dude shoves another guy and then throws his hands up like, whoa, I didn't do anything. Like, oh, it's not us. It's the other guy. It's the U.S. They're the ones meddling. What are you looking at?
Yeah, I also think the North Korea-America relationship is kind of like the Jags-Titans relationship where it's supposed to be a rivalry because you're in the same division, but like one of them is just so far out of the other one's league that it's, even though it is a divisional rivalry, it's not really a rivalry. Like, both sides have to win something for it to be remotely an actual contest. Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on to round number two, which today is going to be presented by our good friend at Nomad. I found out another good thing about Nomad because one thing that I have fallen in love with is the ability to do, I have iPhone 11. I didn't know that my phone had the wireless charging capability.
Oh, yeah.
Until like 2 weeks ago. And I got one for my truck and one for my office. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's the best when I only have one free arm when I'm holding the baby in the rocking chair and I can just, because you can't use your both arms to plug in whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That Nomad wireless charger sits right on a little table next to the rocking chair. I can pick it up, pick it down. It's like been a, it's so hugely helpful. Yeah.
And
it looks
like,
cool.
And normally your charger will prevent it from being able, or your case will prevent it from being able to pick up the wireless charger. Not this one, still does it. So if you don't have one of these chargers and the case from Nomad, do it. Go to nomadgoods.com/zero. That's nomadgoods.com/zero. You're going to love everything that they have to offer. It's pretty incredible stuff. And it's great quality leather, great quality things that are, I beat the shit out of my phone and it still looks like the same that I got it a few months ago. So it definitely works and lasts a long time. All right, let's move on to round number two. Round number two comes to us from Missouri. On Tuesday, a reporter with St. Louis Dispatch alerted the state that the Social Security numbers of school teachers and administrators were vulnerable to public exposure due to flaws on the websites maintained by Missouri Department of Education. Not a surprise at all, because it is a government website after all. And somehow, even though they own the internet, they are the worst at it. Like, yes. It makes no sense at all. Yeah. Every government website is trash. But Thursday, the governor, Mike Parsons, was labeling the Post-Dispatch reporter as a hacker and vowing to seek criminal prosecution. So this reporter finds out that they have Social Security cover. And how they did this is pretty interesting. It's not like they went in and actually did the hacking. You know, on a lot of different websites, you can go in and you can find the source code. Like, you go in the source code and you can actually do this to get around a lot of the paywalls for like the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal. Like, if you go down there and you click on proxy, like, they won't let you, it won't have the paywall up anymore. So you can get around that kind of thing. And so that this reporter just did that. It's an option that you can look into. You don't have to put in any code. You don't have to put in any, like, type in any numbers or anything like that. It's just there if you click on it. And he saw that they had the information that was listed off to the side, that of all their birth dates and social security numbers. Well, in the government, we've been guarding that for years. It's the reason why the military no longer has their social security number on the back of the ID card. It's the reason why you don't use, I mean, when I joined the Marine Corps, every single thing had your social security number on it. Even like your monthly counseling sheets, your daily dog training, everything had your social security. And then they figured out that's probably not the best idea. Well, they want this guy, the governor said he's going to send this dude to jail and wants him prosecuted. He has the highway patrol doing the investigation. He referred it to a prosecutor. This administration is standing up against any and all perpetrators who attempt to steal personal information or harm Missourians. I got a feeling that the governor should have just said, thank you, we will get this problem fixed.
Yeah, so he's vowing to prosecute this reporter for exposing a security flaw in an agency website with 100,000. This is 100,000 people.
All the teachers in the state.
And this reporter held the story and let them know, hey, you need to fix this. I won't report this. Fix it first. And then
which he didn't have to do.
Which they did not have to do. And now he's essentially, like, you know, they say, don't shoot the messenger. This person was actually doing
the messenger.
This person was doing a huge favor, and this governor is an idiot.
Yeah, they should be thanking him for exposing this weakness and not deciding to just run with the story. So I don't understand the big hullabaloo here. He should be thanked.
Yeah. And honestly, this is exactly what happens in theater. This is why I put this on the sheet, because the junior person, the person not at the top, not the decision maker, informed somebody else that there was a huge problem. And they're like, no, actually, you're the problem. It's not us. It's you. And he's pointing the finger back. I think the Post-Dispatch had a great response. They said a hacker is actually somebody who subverts computer security with malicious or criminal intent. Here, there is no breach of any firewall or security, and certainly no malicious intent. For the government to detect these failures by referring to this as hacking is unfounded. Thankfully, these failures were discovered. So they figured it all out, and the newspaper is going to be like, what the fuck are you talking about?
This is the Parsons said, it's just a political game by what is supposed to be one of Missouri's news outlets. No, dude, they were doing their job and they actually
helped. We would have got away with it for these meddling for kids.
Damn reporters.
You're
right, chaps. That is a classic example of, and again, this circles back to, like, how in the hell did the Afghanistan war go on for as long as it did and blah, 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 because nobody wants to point out the flaws to the people at the top, because shit like that happens. The messenger gets shot.
Yeah.
And yeah.
And then a lot of times the response, which is similar to what we're seeing here, is just to go over the top with anger and tell that person why they're wrong or why they shouldn't have been telling us that message in the first place. Just ignoring the fact that it was a good thing what he did. They just got angry that they got exposed. So they get double angry over the top. Not a good way to respond. Mm-hmm.
Nope. Not a good way to respond. And that's not the only time that happened this week. Kate, walk us through round three and what happened, what's going on in Afghanistan.
Yeah. So this comes to us from the LA Times. If you are still following what's happening in Afghanistan, the LA Times has done an incredible job. David Pearson and Marcus Yam stayed behind. I was following their images religiously in the final week when everyone was leaving the airport and everything. They stayed behind and have continued reporting from Afghanistan, and the images coming out, everything. It's just been incredible work. So I'm going to read this story from them about what happened after that bombing, that drone strike that killed those innocent people in Afghanistan. Amal Ahmadi and his older brother, Zamari Ahmadi, were inseparable. They'd sit on the plush red rug and tan red and tan rug in their living room, eat meals together, discuss family, work, and distressing changes shaking their country as troops began evacuating and the Taliban rose to power. He was a good man, said Amal, cracking a brief smile, recounting how Zamari loved to sing popular Afghan songs at parties. As an aid worker for a California-based charity, the 40-year-old Zamari was also the family's breadwinner. When he was errantly killed along with 9 other family members in a U.S. drone strike in August, Amal took some solace in comments by American officials that they were considering paying compensation. But 6 weeks after he lost his brother, Amal said he has yet to be contacted by the U.S. government to apologize or offer help. A jobless father in a battered land, his 3-year-old daughter, Malika, was killed in the blast. Amal is struggling to provide for an extended family of 15. 9 family members. You can't even imagine. I can't even imagine one, let alone 9. Why are they not contacting us? Why are they not reaching out to us? We lost 10 members of our family. Pardon me, 10. It's very difficult for me, for our family, for all of us, said Amal, 32, standing in front of the charred remains of a car in the family compound near Kabul that the U.S. military mistook for a vehicle used by an offshoot of the Islamic State. I remember they said the excuse was, we thought that they were loading something, and it turns out they were loading jugs of water for their family or something.
Jesus.
For a charity.
I didn't know that.
And that is how they transfer HME. Like HME does come in homemade explosives, does come in jugs like that. It's either jugs like that. It could be in bread flour bags or rice flour bags is a very popular way to transport it. So the mistaking the water jugs, I think that we're thinking like water jugs, like you would get milk containers. It's not like that. It does. That is how they store HME. So not to excuse it. You still got to know, but that's the reason why. It's not just like they're bringing out Dasani waters. That's how HME is transported too. I think that's why they mistook it.
But at the same time, inexcusable, because they also know.
Oh yeah, you got to check. You got to know.
They also know that Afghans use those jugs every day. Innocent Afghans use those every day.
Yeah, that's why they use it, because they're readily available. Everybody uses it. It's kind of like, oh, you see an MRE on the side of the road. That's got to be an IED. Well, no, there's thousands of people here that fucking eat MREs every day.
Yeah. But he goes on to say, I'm so angry. I'm so sad. And he's also requesting the U.S. to help his family relocate to safety. They're still stuck in that same spot where their whole family was fucking massacred. Innocent family. So General Kenneth
McKenzie. And not just
McKenzie,
that, but because they're still in the same spot, the Taliban knows where they are, because they were trying to help the U.S. Like they were helping the U.S. with the refugees.
So each day, each hour that they're there longer, they're just putting their lives at risk further.
Yeah, absolutely. And way back on September 17th, pretty much a month ago now, General Kenneth McKenzie, head of U.S. Central Command, he offered sincere and profound condolences, which were obviously empty and don't mean shit because they haven't been contacted since then. He suggested it was difficult to reach people in Afghanistan now that the troops had left. Fucking bullshit. Mm-hmm. Fucking bullshit. You're the head of U.S. Central Command. Figure it the fuck out, with all due respect. Like, I know you can. I know you can.
Right.
Central Command did not respond to a request for comment or an update on plans to pay Amal's family. McKenzie said the strike was launched because, again, the military believed there was an imminent threat. Days earlier, 13 U.S. service members were killed in a suicide bombing outside the airport. Zamari, who worked for 16 years for the Pasadena-based nonprofit Nutrition and Education International, was killed when the hellfire hit his white Toyota. 7 children were among the victims. McKenzie called the attack a tragic mistake. It was a horrific final act, and its chaotic nature seemed to distill 2 decades of America's failure to build a stable Afghan government. The admission of error so soon after the incident was unusual and likely prompted by the intense media attention, because this was a huge, and again, these LA Times reporters, it would have been swept under the rug had it not been for media staying behind and documenting this. The photos of those funerals of the children, if you haven't seen them, go look at Marcus. Go look at his page. I mean, gut-wrenching. One of them was being buried as the final plane was taking off, one of the final planes was taking off overhead. The U.S. has a poor track record of awarding condolence payments to non-combatants. Not a single offer of monetary compensation to civilians was made in 2020, despite Congress allocating $3 million in funding each year to compensate those harmed by U.S. military operations anywhere in the world. Independent estimates suggest that about 71,000 noncombatants were killed in Afghanistan since 2001.
That's really tough, though, right? Because if you lose a family member, if any one of us lost a family member, there's no amount of money that would be able to make us feel any better about that.
That's not true, though, because if the breadwinner is killed, if somebody is killed who's...
Not make you feel better, but it does allow your situation to improve.
Yes. Well, no, I was going to get to that and say that, like, yeah, obviously that would certainly help your everyday life, but no amount of money can replace that empty hole in your heart where that family member once was. $3 million seems a little light to me when you consider the amount of money in the DOD budget. So I don't understand why it's not higher. And also, what's the barrier behind getting those payments to these families?
I think it's lack of care. And I think this is the type of situation where the media is absolutely necessary. And these type of stories, and not just without the media, we don't uncover and know what happened. And we still think that it was an ISIS K dude. We don't have any idea that it was 10 civilians.
Yeah.
And I wonder how many stories are like that the media didn't follow up on, or different organizations didn't follow up on. And we see the actual story of what happened. But this kind of thing happens all too often, and you have to stay on top of people. And I don't think that this was intentional on President Trump's part, but it reminds me of that story that happened in 2017, where President Trump called the father and said that he was going to give him $25,000 out of his own personal money. He said that in June. And then different reporters reached out to him in October, and they said, no, I haven't got it. We haven't heard from anybody. He said he was going to give it, but it's not a big deal. Eventually, the check did come from President Trump, and he didn't give it to the family, but it took October and media following up. Media following up on this, I think, is the only way to hold people accountable. The only way.
Also, General Kenneth McKenzie is on Twitter at Jen Kenneth FMCK4.
Classic Barstool, a little sending your Twitter followers after so, people.
Yeah, sticking the stoolies on them.
Yeah, go just say, hey, excuse me, what's up with that?
No, just send a pirate flag.
Send a pirate flag. And Amal says, in closing, he says, I have no doubt more people will die the way my family members die. If we are to avoid what my family has gone through, we need a working government. There should be rule of law and accountability. But if this continues, more families will suffer. This poor, man. And looking again, there's photos accompanying the story for the LA Times. Follow Marcus Yam and David Pearson if you're interested at all in this. They have been doing such incredible work and highlighting stories like these that truly matter. So hopefully the U.S. gets back to those people and compensates them in some sort of way. That.
But doesn't, you tell me if you disagree, but doesn't it just feel so hollow? Like, hey, we killed somebody by accident. Here's a bag of money. And then we walk away. I get what we're saying.
Better than nothing, though.
Better than nothing. I don't know. Just
bare minimum,
hollow.
I would say.
Yeah, than nothing. Because now the rest of the family continues to suffer without their main breadwinner. You know, that's.
Yeah, but so I don't know what the hoops they have to jump through to give these families these money. Or
that's the U.S. government; they could figure it out.
No. Or if there's no hoops, and they should just do this very easily. But I wonder if there's more that they could be doing in the meantime until the money gets there to help with this family. Maybe provide.
Of course, you're the strongest nation on earth. You can do anything you want. Yeah,
that's what I'm just saying. Yeah. Like, I feel like there's a lot of excuses here. So. Circling back on what you all already said, just great on these journalists for continuing to track this down.
No doubt about it. All right, let's move on to round number four. It'll be a lighter note, and it'll be presented by our friends that'll help you get lighter, and that's Trifecta Nutrition. Trifecta Nutrition is the best nutrition program in the game. In the same way that Dave has perfected the pizza in frozen form, Trifecta has perfected the organic meal delivery. Eating healthy does not have to suck when you get a chef-created, dietitian-certified meal delivered straight to your door, and a little bit of dry ice. I love a little dry ice goofing, and they have these packages that come. Even if you do a one-time order, they have these big old things that they freeze before they send out to you. You can keep those, put them back in your freezer. When you do a little picnic next spring, you'll be ready to take that out and have your chicken salad cold so you don't get diarrhea, right, Kate?
buddy. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
All Trifecta's meals are backed by nutrition science and they taste great. So eat the one bite pizza and then bounce it out with a delicious meal later. You don't have to suffer to eat healthy. That's what we keep telling people. You can get down to a slim and trim 193 like I am right now. Make sure you go to trifectanutrition.com/zero. You're going to get 40% off with the code zero. Let's move on to round number four. We're doing a little MP goofing because those fellas and ladies, they're all standing at the gates. And I think, well, we're going to say this is garrison MPs. These are base MPs, not field MPs.
Not field MPs. I was a field MP, which means I'm a better person.
That's exactly.
Even though I did get fapped over to the gate, I did get fapped over for a month. So
yeah, isn't that weird that fapped is the term for that? And now it means jerking off.
Now it means jerking off. What does fapped mean in a non-jerk off way?
Is that an acronym for something?
It's got to be, but I don't know. I don't remember what it is. It's one of those that's so commonly used as the word that the actual, like laser, like where it doesn't actually mean that, or scuba. Like you don't even, it's hard to remember what the actual thing means.
Yeah. But we went and asked on at Zero Blog 30, how many times have you been pulled over on base and what was the infraction? Assault Forward Josh says, I got pulled over by Air Force Security Forces in Balad, Iraq in 2011 for not coming to a complete stop at a stop sign. It was 0300 hours and I was the only one on the road. He also told me I was getting 3 points on my stateside driver's license on post driver's license.
Can you do that? Do that?
No, yeah. Flat out. No, absolutely. Like you can, there is two types of tickets. You can do a ticket where it's only base points. And then in some areas, not all states will let you do it. Virginia was one. You can't apply those points to out in town driver's license. But from Balad, Iraq, no way.
No. Like,
no
shit. I will say I was in Balad. It's huge. So you do need people to kind of police those roads. But at the same time, I can kind of roll through.
They're just bored. That's all it comes down to. They're just bored.
Yeah. I love this one. This is also a deployment one. Sarah Borley said, I got a speeding ticket on deployment. The MP said that my dust cloud was too big, and that's how he knew I was speeding. I told him he was a hero for giving out speeding tickets. I love that he didn't know how fast he just saw that her dust cloud behind her vehicle.
Deployment speeding is kind of like porn. It doesn't have a very specific definition, but you know it when you see it.
So listen to this. At the end of my deployment, I ultimately took over another platoon because my buddy got relieved because the commander
you handled it way better than that war criminal Mitch guy did. Lawrence.
Yeah. No, so I wasn't a platoon leader at the time. I was the FSO and the intel officer. And they said, all right, well, you got to take over so-and-so's platoon now too, because he just got relieved. Because our commander said, from the time he was in one spot and got back to the base, the only way he could have done that was if he was speeding, and then that was reckless. So he took his platoon away from him.
Oh, I've done that. I've done that to my Marines. Like if I leave somewhere and they get there and they're already inside and their dogs are put up, like how the fuck did you get here so fast? Maybe like, I don't know, Staff Sergeant, it's because you're speeding. Go outside and push. Okay. You don't beat me back. If you beat me back, you're speeding. Push.
Fair.
Jared Dugan said, U.S. Air Force captain at Squadron Officer School, day 3, going 28 and a 25. I got a citation copied to the instruction squadron commander. So a few, we got so many saying I was going like 3 or 4 miles over the speed limit. And it's true. I got pulled over going like 4 miles over once. Ross Haferman said, I was pulled over by a warrant officer who followed me a mile in his Prius to my barracks for doing a California roll. I too, like 3 other people, including me, have been pulled over by just random non-MPs. People forget on a military base, everyone is the law. I love this one. Hanson Hall said, when I was 19, I worked as a rental car representative on a military base. One day I got pulled over by MPs while I was whipping a Black Ford Mustang 5.0 with the top down, doing 40 and a 15. I got summoned to the military court and received a 3-year ban. So they were like, I deserved it. It was worth it. Driscoll 258
probably lost his job too. Like probably. If you're in a rental car because you can't even drive it to get gas or whatever.
Yeah, probably wound up in the military, to be honest with you.
No, he's Driscoll,
Driscoll 2581 said, I left the antennas up on my Humvee, pulled over 25 feet outside the motor pool in Fort Chaffee, Arkansas. So they were about to turn into the motor pool and they got in trouble for having their antennas up.
They should play this segment at MP school and be like, just don't be a dick.
Just
like,
just don't be this person.
Like, these people are your battle. These people are on your side. Like, these, all these people, why are you? And the worst part is whenever you do it and they're like, oh, well, we're going to, you can either take this ticket or we're going to let your first sergeant know. And you're like, dude, I'd rather get lashings across the back than let my first sergeant know. I don't want
that.
No, Willie Fife was driving to drop his car off to get shipped to his next duty station. He was like literally in the car about to drop his car off so it could go somewhere else, because it's such a stressful time. You're moving, you're about to leave your car behind, and he got pulled over for going a few miles over the speed limit. I love this one too. Ethan Cock. pardon me. Once for driving a forklift between areas, and it was because the forks weren't at the right level. They were driving a forklift.
Oh, that's a safety violation.
Yeah, you can't do that.
You got to get those forks up. You're gonna make a hole in the road.
Yeah. This one too, the Donley Dew said they were driving out the back Sneed's Ferry Gate on Camp Lejeune, and it's like a 4 or 5 mile long, dark road. It was nighttime. I was going exactly the speed limit, and no one else was on the road, got pulled over for going too slow. So you can't win. There's just...
And there's so many areas that are fun. Like if you're working at bases at night, there's this little base, well, not little, a base called Fatima in Okinawa. And they had all different types of just huge logistic warehouses. I mean, they must have kept everything for Third Mar Div like in there. And they were enormous, like probably the size of like the Mall of America warehouses. But you could drive on top of them. And some of the Marines, whenever they went over there, they had like Supras and shit like that. Like they got the Japanese cars that were like Fast and the Furious cars. Well, at night, those warehouse tops are cement. They're paved. They're slick. They're just like the ones that are out in the road. They're made from crushed up coral, just like the regular roads in Okinawa are. So the Marines at night, if you're working night on the base, you can ride up to the top of the warehouse. And then they would do like spins and like donuts and all that kind of shit there. Well, they got too many people doing it. Eventually the MPs caught on and they pulled up. Like I remember the MPs pulling up and seeing it. Some of my buddies told them, they're like, we pulled up in the bongo vans with the lights blazing. We had the dogs out. I'm like, what were you gonna do? Fucking attack the other Marines because they were driving on top of a building, not hurting anyone. Like you acted like they were trying to do some terrorism shit. They're just goofing. They're just pulling their own little Vin Diesel.
It's crazy. I think a big part of it too is like when you're in a place where nothing happens, the smallest things get blown up into like a big deal thing because they're fucking bored, man. Final shout out to Trav Lay. He says almost 14 years as an MP, mostly reserve, but I've still never written a ticket, nor will I. It's been my pleasure.
Oh, hell yeah.
Thanks, Trav.
I only did one. I wrote one ticket, and that was to a colonel in Okinawa for DUI.
Oh, lovely.
Worth it. Or not worth it necessarily, but...
Well, I didn't want to. It was the Master Guns made me do it. And I, like, whenever we pulled him over, it was so obvious that he was hammered. And it was sake, so you could smell it from a mile away.
Mm-hmm.
And we called in because there's a colonel, and I was only a corporal at the time. So the rules are you can't put an officer in cuffs if you're an enlisted person. You have to get the...
Really?
Yeah, you got an officer down there. Yeah, you could do it if it's a violent situation for protection, but like a courtesy, you don't put cuffs on an officer unless there's an officer on duty. So I was just a dog handler and I didn't know a lot of the rules. So I called in. I'm like, I think the colonel is drunk. And the Master Guns was like, write him a fucking ticket.
He must not have liked that dude.
And so my colonel, the provost marshal, or was actually lieutenant colonel, had to come in and read him his rights and do all that stuff because he was the highest ranking person in PMO.
Fancy.
Two stories you guys hadn't heard today.
Wow.
I didn't. Yeah.
I just love that there's more stories to be told that I don't know everything.
And I just signed a 4-year contract extension, so we got time.
All right, fantastic.
Perfect.
We'll get to all of them, sure. All right, let's move on to round number 5. This will be fast because the old cat card is finally getting out of here. If you served in the last, since 1999, you hate a cat card because they constantly break. It's kind of like, I think the cat card is essentially, you still have yours?
Yeah.
That's a violation. So you have, all of these cat cards that are across the board. And I think we use them now.
What does it stand for?
Common access card.
Mm-hmm.
So you have these cards that are just ID cards that have the little chip in it. It's kind of like your debit card now, where the debit card can be in increases security because you can get information off of that chip rather than a magnetic strip, which is easier to be hacked or replicated.
Yeah, and you use them to get onto bases, access military computers, the chow hall, and tons of other things that the rest of the base, like civilians and other people, don't have access.
You're 10% off at Applebee's. You flash that bad boy, you get that.
Yep.
Yeah, and this, I forget where I got this article from, but they talking
about Stars and Stripes.
Stars and Stripes, right. Pardon me. But they were talking about too, the common thing across all the military, sticking your credit card into the CAC reader by accident or vice versa, or like using your CAC card to like try and buy gas or something when you're really tired at night.
Or to break into your barracks room.
Everybody's CAC card pictures is fucking horrible.
Oh yeah, they're terrible.
And you get in trouble if you try and do anything silly in it or whatever. Forgetting your CAC at the gate, the surprise of finding your CAC doodled all over if you left it unattended in another room, or people fucking with it, losing people it. And
constantly
then
doodling on the CACs.
There's this great picture that went viral of a unit of it almost looks like a Halloween costume CAC card. They made a human-sized CAC card, and whoever lost their ID would have to put their face in the hole and be the CAC card that day, which is hilarious.
I love that.
But now
the real rule should be, like, as far as like messing with somebody else, if you wouldn't do it to your own CAC, don't do it to somebody else's CAC.
Yeah, don't do it to someone else's CAC unless they give you the go ahead.
Yeah, if you're not gonna, don't put your somebody else's CAC in your mouth if you're not gonna put your own CAC in your mouth.
Exactly. Okay. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the DoD is saying that ditching the CAC could be a vital step for keeping military installations secure. Yes, we've had them since 1990 something, so I'm pretty sure they're a little bit outdated now. I have this notion of, I want to kill the CAC as the primary authentication mechanism for the department, said Air Force Lieutenant General Robert Skinner, the commander of some fancy whatever. Anyway, we have to have something that's better, he said at a cybersecurity summit. Industry has been using other authentication methods for a long ass time, and we need to catch up. Again, I'm paraphrasing
just
here.
Basically summary, they're just trying to catch up with the old CAC card goofing thing. And I, as a lieutenant general, you got to have higher goals. You got, I mean, just to update the old CAC card, that's your intention here.
Like, well, you know, that whole Afghanistan thing is off the table and, you know, weight off your shoulders. So it's like, what are we going to do now? Hey, let's get on to that CAC program.
And the notion that military bases are secure is a joke anyways.
I think this is a noble, this is like a big deal, big brain thing. Because one, it's so overdue. And two, by 2002, the 1 millionth CAC card had been issued. By 2011, the DoD was issuing 10,000 cards a day. And each of the DOD's 3.5 million employees has one, let alone all us veterans like cons running around with them still, you know? So there's so much CAC out there. We're just swimming in CAC. You can't turn left or right without bumping into one.
Mm-hmm.
There's just too much CAC.
Like, oh, CAC.
And
CAC.
I never
just
thought
CAC
that
party
could be
everywhere.
Possible.
It's a big old CAC party.
It's just too much CAC. So basically they're looking at how other companies and other places that also used to use similar like card, whatever, what they're doing. A lot of them are saying now, as they're getting better at face identification and stuff like that, soon you won't even need them. You'll just be able to get, which is also a little scary, just like a quick scan of you and you're set. So
I would be concerned about the budgetary thing, because you have 3.5 million, like coming up with a new way to do it. I mean, you don't, like, for your budget, you don't want to blow your whole load on one CAC. Like, you want to be able to do more things.
I would say you probably want to edge it and really take your time figuring it out.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't do that.
Lam it, wrap it, like, do whatever you got to do to protect it.
Right. Keep it safe. Otherwise, you're going to have a huge mess on your hands. Things get pretty sticky if you're not using your CAC the right way.
I wish we had bigger CACs. These are too small.
Amen.
CACs are out of control.
I mean, 4 inches across, like 4.5 inches. That's how you're supposed to know how big of a blade.
And that's hard.
That's not, that's 4 inches. I mean, give me a 6-inch CAC any day.
And forget it, if you're stationed at
anything
Fort
bigger than seven,
cold,
though, I don't want something bigger than a 7.
No, nuh-uh. Mm-mm. I'd say the width is pretty good.
Yeah, the width of the CAC is good.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's move on to some save rounds and alibis, which today is going to be presented by our good friends at Rocky Boots. Rocky Boots is the best boots in the game. It's payday. It's the 15th as you are listening. And that means you have some money in your pocket so you can get some new boots so you don't look like a shitbag. Right, Kate?
Absolutely.
So go to rockyboots.com/CBT. You're going to get 25% off boots, hiking boots, whatever. It's almost hiking season. Saturday here. Lows in 46. 46 in San Antonio. I have a cold front going through. 70s. I'm going to be firing up the old hot tub. I'm going to be doing some stuff outside, which is going to be great. I was supposed to do longtime Thule videos this week. And next thing you know, my wife's little appendix started to be a nasty little worm and all gross, so I'd take her to the doctor, so I didn't have time to do that. But I do have time to order some new boots at rockyboots.com. Enter the promo code ZBT, you're gonna get 25% off. Let's do a little save rounds and alibis. Nick, we'll start with you.
I was talking to my buddy, he's actually a Marine too, and I mentioned how you killed a spider on air. And he said to ask you guys about camel spiders and if you guys have ever experienced them. He said it was the most scared he's been. He said at night, like in the tents, the shadows would come and they would appear like 9 feet tall. I don't know. He just said ask about camel spiders. So here I am.
Yeah, there's this infamous photo that went super viral. Turns out it was sort of the camera angle that it was at, but the spider looked like it was. Like it should have been on Sesame Street character. That's how big it was. Like it was the size of Big Bird, basically. And the rumor was that they, you know, you're in the sunny desert, there's no trees, and these spiders to like survive, they follow the shadows. So if you were your body was the only shadow around, you could run all you want, but the spider is going to be following you right in your shadow kind of thing, which is fucking terrifying to think about. Turns out a lot of that stuff about the camel spiders is not exactly true, but there were huge ass spiders out there that I crushed a couple with my boot out there that I thought were camel spiders.
How big are they?
Small bodies, but the legs were fucking huge. Yeah.
Because he has a phobia. So like, it's actually like debilitating. Like
so the real size, like that you could see it some on the internet, they're about as big as a pack of cigarettes.
He just put it in the group chat, Nick, if you want to look. But
Nick, one time I was in the gym, I was doing some squats, no big deal. You don't get this behind by accident.
What was on the bar?
I think it was only like 250, maybe 225, nothing crazy. And I walked away from the rack, and then all of a sudden between my 2 feet, what came a camel spider. And I just kind of froze because I didn't want to just drop the weight and have this thing jump all over me. I
had you drop your cack on it.
My cack was chilling with my weapon.
Did your cack retreat back into your wallet?
Yeah. It was tough.
Is the first photo hard. One spider or is that two spiders?
It's two spiders.
It's a dangle.
Yeah, they taught me how to dangle. So, one of my buddies got bit on the head by a camel spider.
Oh,
and it like on the back of his neck behind his ear, and he had this gray spot that grew and grew and grew. It's still on his head, like 15 years later or whatever it is, where he has like this big gray patch of hair and the rest of it is brown. And it was because he got an infected spider bite.
Bro, there are spiders growing in that dude's head.
Something. He's gross anyways. His name is Adam. You should. He's disgusting.
Gross. Mm-hmm. Gross.
Adam Dunn. Gross man. All right. Kate, what about you?
You know, the other bad thing about cat cards is the little head, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Little head on it.
You're just gonna milk this cack stuff for a while, aren't you?
Oh, you gotta milk the cack.
There's a website for that.
Milk the cack.
Boot leave is. I didn't know the Marine Corps got rid of boot leave for the last 2 years.
Is that just leave right after boot camp?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And normally you get, I forget how many, 10 days or something.
Oh,
They think it's like not 10 free days. I had to go work with my recruiter for those days or whatever.
No, you get Charlie. 10 days, and then you can have recruiter's assistance. That adds time to it.
Oh, I somehow only had the 10 days, but got sucked into doing that at the same time. Anyway,
Kate didn't listen.
Yeah, I did not listen. But yeah, so I guess they probably got rid of it because of COVID. They didn't want you going home and then going back to your unit, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, it makes sense. But it's coming back. So that is exciting news for people who are in boot camp right now. I remember on my boot leave, you haven't drank in 3 months. I went out to Center City Sips in Philadelphia, which is
Sips.
Yeah. Oh, it's a huge tons of like every
Sips
year
coming back.
No, too many finance bros getting in fist fights. Totally ruined it. But that's the kind of night it is. It's just a dirtbag Philly night. And I went out and got super fucking hammered, which was a real treat. Anyway, that's it for me.
All right, cons.
I'm just gonna shoot it back to Kate very quickly. Kate, did I hear correctly that you were talking on the quiet car? on the train?
On the New Jersey Transit. I never got, I saw Frank the Tank. And so I hopped on the car that he was getting into, not realizing it was the quiet car. And so I'm like, hey, how's it going? Blah, blah, blah. And this old lady admonished me on the quiet car. And everybody rightfully looked at me like I was a huge asshole. Yeah. I didn't know.
Rightfully so, for sure.
I asked Frank last night. I said, so you got in a little trouble on New Jersey Transit. And he goes, well, wasn't me.
Yeah, you've been hanging out with Frank.
I was like, well, who was it? He's like, well, I'm not going to say. I was like, there's a photo of you, one other person.
It was me. I got it.
I'm glad he was trying to be discreet, though, after he tweeted the photo.
Very, very.
There was a tweet this week that kind of just made me laugh. So at West Point, we have what's called Thayer Weeks because Sylvanus Thayer, founder of the academy, the Thayer method of learning.
Sandwich up.
Yeah, exactly. No, it just means a Thayer Week is when you have like a lot of tests and papers due, and it's just like a really difficult week for school. So there was a tweet that, of course, West Point has to give our kids a Thayer week leading up to maybe our biggest game of the year because we're playing Wisconsin at Wisconsin this year. And the dean tweets back, just cold-blooded. It builds character. I just thought that was funny.
I like that. Difficult situation. You got to do it. You got to focus in. I didn't mean the other day when we talked about it. I legitimately, because normally I don't care about Army, but I will check the score to see if they won or lost. I didn't do it 1 week and you guys lost to Ball State. What was that?
Yeah. David Letterman
was probably happy.
Yeah, he definitely was. They returned the opening kick for a touchdown. And I just think that put us in a funk that we weren't able to come out of. You take that away and it's a tie game for most of the game. So I expected to come back and then we just didn't, we just couldn't get it going. It was just one of those
days like that.
Yeah, sometimes. Sure. But yeah, thankfully your Roadrunners are still undefeated. So that's good.
Yeah, I'm surprised too. I think I'm going to go to the homecoming game tomorrow.
Nice.
Which will be a good time. They're playing UNLV.
I know you guys mentioned General Odierno's passing, and that was obviously worth mentioning. I just wanted to just add two more personal stories of General Odierno. He came back. This is a secondhand story from one of my buddies who was on the baseball team. He came back and they had just beaten Navy, and he said, wow, I'll tell you what, that win against Navy, that was almost as good as pulling that shithead out of that rat hole a few weeks back. And he was obviously talking about Saddam Hussein and finding him in that hole. I thought that was a good anecdote. But then also, one of the images I'll always have of General Odierno was after the Army-Navy game in 2012, and we're, 11 years into losing to them at this point, and we're getting ready to score, and our quarterback and fullback had a bad exchange on the 7-yard line. Navy recovers, wins the game. And if you Google Trent Steelman, Army Navy, you'll see these images. The kid was just inconsolable, sobbing more so than I've maybe ever seen someone sob in an athletic event before. And then there's this image of General Odierno, this big, empowering, imposing figure with his arm around Trent, consoling him. I have no idea what he said to him that day, but I can only imagine that it was still words of encouragement to help him off the ground. And it was just an image that'll stick with me of General Odierno. And he was a great man, a great leader, and a lot of people have a lot of great things to say about him. So he will be missed. And then finally, if anybody wants to say anything to me, now's the time to say it.
Is today your birthday? Tomorrow. Yesterday?
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Oh, when you're listening to this, wish Captain Khan's a happy birthday.
Oh, thanks, Kate. Thanks for remembering.
You got me an air fryer. We're pals for life.
I've gotten that air fryer for at least another 3 years.
It's been such a huge game changer. No, truly.
Yep. Happy birthday. That's all I got. Thank you.
I don't got anything. The Lieutenant Colonel Scheller thing seems to be finally over. The court case this morning was essentially finished. He pleaded guilty to all counts, including, I didn't know this. I knew a lot of the details behind it, what was going on. I did not know this. 26 counts of disobeying a lawful order and disrespect to a superior officer. And a part of his plea agreement, he had to enter in a statement where he apologized for essentially talking shit about General Berger and another general as well, saying that he outmaneuvered them and tried to professionally embarrass them and things like that. He took responsibility, which a lot of people are saying that he took responsibility and accountability, which is what other people wanted. I think that that's two totally different situations. One, you're doing it in a court of law where they have you dead to rights on video doing it over and over and over again. So that situation is just a touch different. But overall, I hope his family starts to get peace, because I think that that's what the media primarily has been focused on, is what's going on with him, what's going on with the government, rightfully so. That's where most people's concerns are going to be, is what, how it affects the military, what it's going to affect later on. Did that infect the minds of young Marines and other military service members as well? I understand those concerns, but there's also children that were involved, the wife that was involved, family members that are involved that had to really deal with a storm like this. And Kate and I talked about this offline. For people like us that are in the public eye, that are used to this, that have large followings on social media, when the mob comes at us, it really doesn't bother us anymore. Like you've dealt with it. Once you deal with it once, the next time it comes, it's fine. Like you ignore it for a day or two and it's over, because people forget about it. We have very short-term memories. For somebody that doesn't deal with that type of thing and having a story that has this much traction, it is incredibly overwhelming to the families. I feel so bad for them, and hopefully that they get a little peace and they're able to start moving on with the rest of their lives. And the Lieutenant Colonel as well. He had a very honorable career and did great things. From what I hear, he's a fantastic leader. I hope that he goes on, and after he gets out of the Marine Corps, he goes on and he leads and does great things and does it the right way. That's my hope. I hope we end up in a good saga instead of just a sad story overall that we've been watching unfold before our eyes for the last 2 months. I'm thankful that it's over. Sound the retreat.